Welcome to CL Talk, the leading podcast for the legal profession across Canada, brought to you by Canadian Lawyer Magazine. Hello, my guest today is Lina Yousefi, a family law lawyer and mediator, and the founder of Y Law, which is a firm with offices throughout the Vancouver area. Lina is well known to our readers. Back in 2017, she wrote a very personal account for the magazine about a child abduction case she worked on. In 2018, she was recognized as one of the top 25 most influential lawyers. And in 2022, she was named a Lexpert Rising Star, which recognizes lawyers 40 and under. She's also been widely recognized by media and the business press outside of our publication. Welcome to CL Talk, Lina.
Thank you for having me.
So first, I wanted to ask you about your firm. So I know it's grown quite a bit recently. So how many lawyers do you have and what kind of services do you provide?
Right now, we have about 22 lawyers, and it could probably be a lot more than that, but we have a physical space issue. We literally need like bunk desks at this point. So once we lease more space, hopefully we'll grow more. We were primarily focusing on family law, but I just realized that there's so much talent in other areas of law, and that gets me really excited. So starting last year, we started expanding into estate litigation, immigration law, strata, you know, all the fun stuff. And those departments have been doing really well. So the future is bright.
Great. And I know you describe yourself as the largest female-led law firm in Canada.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit about that.
That's because we are. I was just speaking to somebody the other day. There's a lot of women in, you know, managing partner roles, you know, in leadership roles and stuff like that in the legal community. But I personally haven't seen too many law firms where there's a female founder and a female leader, and it's completely led by that woman versus being a part of a committee or a bunch of, you know, managing partners and, you know, having equity stakes like that. So I think the one part of my career that I'm most proud of is this, because I feel like I've been able to bring different kind of perspective into how law can be run, and it's been proven successful. It's not the only successful model, but it's another model that perhaps can be considered. And one of the reasons we're growing is to just kind of legitimize that this works, and it doesn't have to be on small scale. We can be on large scale.
Well, that's great. I'll talk to you a bit about how you kind of got to where you are a bit later, but I wanted to dive right into what you just talked about, some of the things you're doing at your firm that are not the norm. And you've spoken with us throughout this year, actually, some of our most popular articles about some of the things you're doing at your firm. One of them was pay transparency. So you said you wanted to be the first law firm of its size in Canada to go completely transparent and uniform on all your pay. So can you tell me a bit about how that journey and where you've ended up now?
That's a very good question. So we started pay transparency maybe 6 or 7 months ago. And the reason behind it was I get lawyers applying to me, you know, from like, you know, the other countries. And some of them say, we don't even want any pay. I just want to start like get my foot in the door, even though they're super intelligent and dedicated and experienced. They just don't get the attention that some lawyers may get if they're educated in Canada. They come from really strong backgrounds or families or Bay Street. Like, those lawyers come with massive negotiation powers. And really what it comes down to at the end, when it comes to pay, it's not necessarily the level of intelligence or education or even experience. It's negotiation power. And why would I pay somebody more based on how loud they can yell versus paying somebody based on how appropriate or they are for the job, right? So, and then we're talking about gender issues, racial issues, you know, whatever's happening in the world, and we want equality. But I just find that usually people of color, women, minorities, immigrants are the ones that are being discriminated against when it comes to pay. So what we did, we said everybody with the same background, education level and experience level should be technically treated the same. So we are going to level that playing field, because really, if you think about it, there's no risk in doing that, because your people talk to each other and they ask each other how much the other person is making. And if there is a perceived unfairness, they lose trust in you as an employer. Once the trust is lost, you're going to lose retainment. So we basically take a proactive measure to make sure that everybody knows and we're an open book. The other thing is they're very curious about knowing how much the partners are making, because most of these lawyers really want to go on that partnership track. So what is stopping us from telling them how much the partners are making, if that's going to motivate them to get to that level? I don't see any harm there, because again, they're going to know how much partners make. All they're going to have to do is to go on Canly and look at the divorce case of a partner at Osler, whatever it was, and find out how much they're making. So there's no risk there. And then the third element was, I want them to know how much I'm making. It's really important, because some of them might say, I want to be her. Or some may say, she's exploiting me. I'm only making this much and she's making this much in return. So they need to know how much I'm making to make sure everything is level. So the intention behind pay uniformity and transparency that we had was great. We did run into one problem, which I would like everybody to know when they're making this decision, which has become very obvious to me. There's a difference between transparency and uniformity. I think transparency is much more important than uniformity. Transparency is about being open and explaining why you're paying certain people the amount that you're paying. Uniformity is treating everybody the same. And what I've come to realize is that it's not a one-size-fits-all. Some lawyers, when they start working here, they show a lot more initiative, a lot more loyalty, a lot more excitement. So even though the education and experience level is the same, the potential is greater. So we have made a slight revision, not to hold everybody to the same formula, but say this is the base and the standards from which we work from. And if you think that you're better or exceptional or you deserve better, come and talk to us. We may negotiate something more, but the result of that negotiation is going to be reported to the rest of the team. So we're not going to hold that information back. I also do think that if we're going to do uniformity, it's better to keep it for junior lawyers. So if you're year one to year three, really all you're trying to do is to learn the law and just survive the law, right? So you can do a set salary for those 3 years. But 3 years and after, you know, if somebody wants to be on a fee split or negotiate a higher raise because they built more, they collected more, they should be given that opportunity, because it could also disincentivize people from wanting to grow larger by, you know, them thinking, well, I'm getting the same pay as the next person who's not doing as well as I am, so why should I try harder? So that's a big caveat that I did want to mention after trying it for a while.
Well, that's great. It sounds really like a lot to think about. Another thing that you've spoken to us about, which may be related to this, is the 4-day work week.
Yeah.
And that's also focusing on the output, I would assume, of the lawyer more than the input, and treating everyone the same. So tell me a bit about that, what you've learned and where you're at in the journey towards that.
Okay. So the biggest thing I learned was that it's not a fairy tale. A lot, like the 4-day work week, that phrase has become a trend. And from an employer perspective, it scares off a lot of law firms. And I've been laughed at. People are like, you're a joke. You know, what profession do you think you're in? We work 7 days a week. They said that I totally get it. But, you know, I am here. Like, I'm speaking from facts and stats when I say that since we implemented it, we've tripled our size. We've doubled our revenues. We've almost doubled our profits. Our retention rates have skyrocketed because of the applications we get. The most of the people who apply to us are not lazy. They don't come to us because they're so happy they get to work one day less. They just want to have a life, and they're determined to work a lot harder during those 4 days or 5 days. And they're also aware, especially when it comes to lawyers, that we are all bound by the code of professional conduct that says if something is urgent, you got to drop everything and work 7 days a week, 24 hours. Like, we all do that. We're no exception to the rest of the firm. But I think what kind of like differentiates us from the old model is that we have learned how to be a lot more efficient with our time. You know, I was telling somebody, when you're looking at your law firm and your lawyers, at least, you know, like I would say once every 2 months, a lawyer takes a sick day, right? At least once or twice a month, they take a few hours here and there to go and attend a doctor's appointment, right? These things add up. Like, there's a lot of other things. I have to pick up my kid. My kid is sick, or I need more vacation. I'm burnt out. I need a personal day. What we've really done is, it's not that we've given them more time. We've just taken all the time that they take off and we've condensed it to one day a week where they go and do all of that, and then they come back the rest of the week and they can focus on their work. For that reason, we've only experienced mostly positive stuff. There have definitely been challenges, been a lot of challenges, because it's a new policy and it can get messy. And I'm happy to explain it if your audience is interested in knowing.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I think one of the things you spoke about related to the 4-day work week is recruitment and finding the right lawyers.
Yes.
So can you tell me a bit about how you maybe, and you've grown quite a bit recently, mm-hmm. so how you've changed brought forward, a recruitment process that mm-hmm. sort of fits in with what you're aiming to achieve?
I think one thing we need to realize is that lawyers and, law students, they are already hard workers. They know what they need at every stage of their career. I don't hire a law student that comes out of law school and says the reason why I've applied to you is because I can get to work 4 days a week. I don't hire that student. Different stages of life. Like, you come out of law school, you better pay your dues and you better work really, really, really hard. I'm sorry. Like, if you want to become good, you got to work hard. Then you get the lawyers that are, 5 to 10 years, and now they're married and they have kids and they want to spend a little bit more time. They're still going to work hard, but they're going to have their limitations as to what those hours are going to be. Then there's lawyers who work more than 20, 25 years. They've paid their dues. They've perfected the career. They've made a lot of money. They have a big name. The firm really benefits from having those big names. And they say, hey, I want to relax a little bit because I'm making any company a lot of money because my rate is twice the junior lawyer, but I do want to relax a bit. What we've been able to do primarily has been getting those really big names, prominent lawyers that are working at very large firms and are no longer able to sign into that model. And they just want a little bit of relaxation. They still work very hard, but not at the 18, 19, 2000, hours that are expected to them. That's been the best thing because it's legitimized. It has legitimized Wyla, which is relatively a young firm when you compare it to the bigger firms. The second group that we get are lawyers that are very experienced, very good at what they do, but they want that flexibility so that if they want to take that day off, they can. Most of our lawyers do not take every Wednesday off. Wednesday is our day off. Most of them don't take it off. Most of them work at least a few hours here and there. But on a uniform basis, the one comment that they make, the benefit doesn't come to them from having one day off. The benefit comes from the psychological freedom and autonomy of knowing that they can take that day off if they want to. Huge difference between the perception and what they actually value.
That's great. You've spoken on panels also about innovation just more generally in the legal profession. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like some of these things that I would describe as innovative that you brought forward, you have evidence now that they're working, your billing, your growth, the people that are coming to apply at your firm to work. So what do you think is holding back the profession as a whole now that you've gone through some of these changes at your firm? And what would you say to the profession more broadly about what you've learned and what you think is working and why maybe they need to overcome to follow a similar journey?
I think that at the core of this, the big firms set the stage for all the other firms because they're so big and they have so many resources and, they're basically the best in the country. And no matter how much you want to hate on the big firms did some things right, to get to where they are. And not you want to hate, but the big firms get a lot of criticism. That's what I'm trying to say. But unless those firms buy into these movements, these new stuff, the other firms are going to be hesitant because the business of law and lawyers are very risk averse. And there's a lot of fear around, anything that's new and, being introduced. Like, if you look at AI came in, is already legitimate, so you can't fight against it. So now the big firms are dedicating a lot of resources, hiring people to get on top of AI. But there's some stuff that are not as measurable as AI is. And those are these innovative policies that to a lot of firms carry a lot of risk, and they haven't seen the results. So I think at this stage they're watching, and they're cautiously watching. And so that's why my aim is to get as large as possible and show from a legitimate standpoint that this actually works and it's going to benefit your business. Once I get there, I think they're going to sign in. What I've noticed through the seminars and people I've talked to is that there's been a huge increase in the number of people and friends that reach out to me and ask me for my opinion and my take on, you know, what's happening, because they're trying to test it out. There's more firms that are trying to 4-day work weeks and pay transparency as well. I've had a lot of firms reach out and say, we were trying to implement this, you know, how do we go about it? So I think it's gaining traction, but it's going to take its time.
Right. So you're getting questions from, you're not just getting people approaching you who maybe want to work at your firm that are more senior. You're also getting questions from people who are in a leadership position at other law firms about how they can implement some of these things. So you're seeing some of the change percolate out to other places. Where do you think that's going to happen? Is it, and maybe we can talk now about your area of law, family law. Do you think there's something about family law that has made it a bit easier for you to innovate? Are there other family law firms approaching you, or does it matter? And how do you think this will happen in other areas of law in the country or in the world?
To be honest, family law is the hardest one to implement a 4-day work week, just because of the amount of litigation and short leaves and ex partes and no notice abductions, molestations, you know, all sorts of stuff that. It's so urgent and it's so unpredictable that doing a 4-day work, like I imagine, like being the like solicitor based corporate environment, it would be a lot easier. I think that it was the toughest for us, to be honest, to do it. And if we've done it, everybody else can. And surprisingly, I get a lot more law firms, large and small, from the US reaching out and wanting to implement, because I think maybe the Americans, you know, take a bit more risk. I think what's holding the Canadian law firms back is the billable hour, right? Like the targets. How are you going to reach your 1,800 to 2,000 hour target working 4 days a week? But my answer is, not only will they do it, but just don't buy 4 days a week on its face. You know, like it's not that black and white. So it just requires a lot more education and less fear, and it's just going to take its time.
And I think also on the pay transparency, I would imagine that there may be more interest in the U.S. too, because Canadians tend to be a little more reserved and more private about these things. Have you found that?
Yes, and more polite, and you know, but I mean, there's law now, you know, like in BC and probably across Canada, like asking them to disclose. They're already disclosing the range. They have all their spreadsheets. They know all the market stats. They know what every other competitor is offering their associates, and their associates know this as well. So if they take that leap and just become more transparent, they don't have to be uniform, but they don't have to be more transparent. They will retain. We have a major problem with retaining lawyers and turnover, massive. And that's only getting worse with our societal changes, right? Like I read a report somewhere, like right now they're saying the average life of a junior lawyer at a firm is less than 3 years. Like junior lawyers are no longer willing to put up with this, with these things. They're not. We have to put a lot more investment in them. We can't continue doing what we've been doing and expect them to stay. And the more resistance we show, the more we lose. We need to look at what they want and try to kind of like create a balance, because I think it's been very one-sided for a very long time, and the power positions are shifting.
Great. And so now to talk about a bit about family law, because you're talking about, you know, mental health and wellness and how long younger lawyers don't want to put themselves through the same experience maybe that older lawyers are. But I would imagine with family law, that it's hard. There are very emotional issues you're dealing with, and you have said you like to. You feel the emotion of your clients, or you don't detach yourself from your work. So how do you do that if you're working in such a difficult environment? How do you balance those things, and what have you learned being in family law about how to best do that?
I think family law creates a lot of mental health issues, and my heart goes out to those young lawyers that come out of law school and they think that they want to help people and they go into family law and they realize it's entirely different than what they thought. So you have somebody who came into your firm with all hopes and dreams, needs to learn the skill of client manager, needs to learn mental health issues and toxic relationships, power imbalances, needs to learn how to bill, which is a huge skill that nobody teaches you, needs to learn how to reach their targets and tell people how to deal with their kids when they usually don't have their own kids. Like, it's horrendous. And that's what happened to me, because I was like, my God, I'm like 20 something years old and 50 year olds are asking me what to do with their kids and their relationships. It's terrible for a lot of them. A lot that the lawyer that can detach him or herself and say, this is just the job, I'm trying to learn the law. It's, you know, it's family law, but I'm going to detach myself, is my ultimate admiration, you know. And we have those lawyers at Wyla. I could never be that lawyer. And so we get a whole range of, I'm going to detach myself to, I can't detach myself, and everybody that falls in the middle. But one thing that applies to family law, and I think every other area of law, is how you take that associate and what they're perceiving about what they're doing. How do you give them hope? Because what happened to me and what caused me to reduce and then stop practicing family law was the fact that I was doing the same thing all day, every day, and I was not going anywhere. I was completely stuck, and the mental health aspect was just piling up, right? So what we have to do, and I think every firm has to do, is to sit that associate 1 hour at the end of each year and say, what is one or two things that works for you? What are one or two things that didn't work for you? And if by December of 2024, you wanted to make your life 10 to 20% better, what would that look like? Is it doing a different type of law? Is it doing a different kind of case in family law? Is it doing community work? Is it dabbling your fingers into another area of law? You don't have to fix family law or their career, but you do need to give them hope. And that's called career pathing, which is something that I feel is missing hugely in a lot of firms, because as soon as the associate comes in, there's a target and there's an hour and there's a collection, but there's not too much talk about where they want to go and what they're struggling with. So we started doing that. Yes, it takes a lot of time, lots of effort, lots of investment, but it pays back tenfold because it keeps the associate happy and hopeful. And that's what we need to shoot for as employers.
That's great. Now I want to ask you a bit about your own story. You are very open about, as I said, some of the mental health struggles, and you've talked about your personal stories. Yeah. I noticed recently, I see your posts on social media that you posted about getting together with Jewish friends and how the Middle East conflict is dividing people, and try to be more human about how this is happening. So can you tell me a bit about just being open on social media and how it's sort of why you've decided to be like that, and how it helps or the challenges in your career to be have that open approach?
I grew up in war myself. I'm from Iran. When I was 6 years old, you know, we were getting bombed, and I remember thankfully nothing happened. I just kind of injured myself and I had blood on my hand one day. But I remember the trauma. I remember that it made a lifelong impact on me and my entire family. Then I came to Canada in my teenage years, and I looked different and I acted different, and there was an all-out silent rejection. You know, there were people that were throwing gum in my hair, but that wasn't as upsetting as the absolute isolation and rejection of my peers. Like, you know, like I was just telling my Jewish friends that some of them are actually experiencing anti-Semitism for the first time. They never experienced it because they lived in Canada and they thought it was all dandy. But I said I started experiencing the rejection perhaps that you're experiencing when I was a kid and then when I was 14. And I used to walk home at every lunch break because I was so embarrassed of people seeing me sitting there in the cafeteria eating on my own. I would walk home and I would eat at home, and I would only go to school when the class started, and I had no dates. Nobody wanted to dance with me at prom. And the seeds of like depression and anxiety grew when I was experiencing those things in my teenage years, and they kept on extending until I was expelled from university at the age of 19. So then I found myself back into law school and you know, I became a lawyer. But I think the fact that I went through that created this empathy, not just for my clients, but for my people and for my peers. So like when I see people who are in pain and experiencing what I experienced, the only thing I can do as a human is just to show them love and empathy and say that they're not alone. I think we have trained ourselves to act strong and hide our vulnerabilities. And because we're so afraid of losing opportunities and people judging us. And for some reason, I simply don't have that fear. I don't care what people think of me anymore. I guess I've been rejected enough that I don't care. And I feel like the more I reveal, the more good people come into my life. And those are the people that I want to surround myself with. So I think a lot of what I do is because of that. And the other aspect regarding 4-day work weeks and pay transparency and all this stuff that we do is because I was so limited and oppressed as a kid that all I could do is go to bed and close my eyes and imagine. So I started developing creativity at a very young age because it was the only way I could sustain and survive. And that has really helped me with the business side of things because I am still that creative, fearless person, and I have the ability to bring that to life, which is honestly the highlight of my life and my career.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you so much for telling me, you know, about all these really interesting things and in your personal life as well as your law firm and the successes you've had with you know, a really unusual approach, I would say, in the legal community. Although things from a, you know, a legal journalism perspective, things are moving in this direction. I think you'll probably find more lawyers asking you questions about how you have brought in these new approaches because they are becoming more widely adopted. So it's great to be able to speak with you and to provide our readers with some insights about how you you've worked through these issues. Is there anything else that, you know, I didn't ask about that you think lawyers in Canada would be interested to know about your firm or about your story?
Nothing about my firm or my story, but you know, the one thing that I really want to relay is that we as a profession really need to lose our fears and take more risks. The reason why we're being held back is because we're so risk averse, and it's like stopping our improvement. So I really hope all lawyers and law firms kind of like at least give it a try or listen to new ideas and try to implement them because that's the only way we can shift ourselves in the right direction.
Well, thank you so much. That's a great note to end on. And thank you for joining us today, Lena, and best of luck in the new year with all your firm's growth and trying even more new ideas for the employers to learn about in the future.
Thank you so much, Ben, for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to CL Talk. You can listen to the latest episodes on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and all major listening channels. Just search for CL Talk.